Okay, so like many people, we didn't really know what we were going to be talking about today or how it would work.
So. Quite what I am.
Yeah. Yesterday, Remy said to me, Kyle, I think we're going to have to present something. And I said, well, okay, just in case, you should send me some slides. So the last time we presented this was about an hour and a half talk. So we cut it down to 10 minutes. And I think what's relevant today is the work we've been doing is looking at how consumers process label information and food label information. And we take a fairly theoretic view. That's the kind of work that we tend to do. So what we're looking at is it's still a part of this global problem of obesity. What we're really interested in is how we can help consumers make better decisions generally, and in this case, in terms of self-regulatory decisions, how we can help them meet the goals that they set for themselves. So we're interested in how food labels affect the choices that people make, how they process that information, and then how that changes their consumption behavior. We start from this basic principle we've talked a lot about this morning already, actually, in different ways, but the idea that people approach pleasure and try to avoid pain, right, is a basic motivational force. And so we're looking at those attributes of products that are about pleasure, like, you know, how tasty that cookie is going to be if I eat it, versus those that might be about the cost. So I'll talk in terms of cost and pleasure attributes. And cost would be something more like how many calories or how much fat is in that cookie and what the cost might be to me and my dietary goals. So I won't spend too much time talking about theory, but it's worth just mentioning quickly. In terms of self-control, there's sort of three factors that drive how successful we are. So one is that we have a goal in the first place. Second is that we can monitor how we're doing towards that goal. So if my goal is to be eat healthier, reduce the calories that I consume, then I need to be able to somehow know whether or not I'm eating healthier or whether or not how many calories I'm consuming. So that's the monitoring part. It's understanding how many calories I ate today. And then the third one, which is maybe a little bit more controversial, is the notion that we have a set amount of self-regulatory resources. Maybe it gets replenished every day after we sleep, wake up in the morning, but it's like a cup. And every time I resist something or use self-control, I spend some of the resources out of that cup until it's eventually empty and I have trouble exercising any kind of self-control. So that's the basic theory. And then what we want to look at is if we compare those people who have a dieting goal to those who don't, how does that affect the way they process this cost versus pleasure information? And so that's the basic paradigm. And then I'll give you a couple examples. This would be what kind of information? Cost or pleasure? I was hoping that would be pretty easy. So the idea is this would be the pleasure information, right? It's telling you how good it's going to taste. It's trying to make the chocolate look yummy. Whereas the cost information would be this kind of information that you see in the package, right? So how much fat there is, 30% of your daily value, carbs, whatever, sugars, calories, 230 for four pieces, that kind of information. And so we give participants the opportunity to look up either type of information. We prime them, or we give them a goal. So we instill in their minds a goal to either be healthier and make healthier choices or not. Then we look at what kind of information they process. We do this in a couple of different ways. There's different ways to measure it. Some is computer-aided measures of what kind of information they're looking at. Other measures are just thought listings. So we give them a goal, and then we ask them to list their thoughts. And so people who have a dietary goal tend to list thoughts about eating less or restricting the type of food they eat, whereas people without that goal default to pleasure. Right, so without having that strong active goal that I want to diet, we tend to default to a pleasure goal, which is those cookies will taste really good. So I think that hopefully is fairly straightforward, because if you our prediction then is if you focus on pleasure, you're going to consume more of something like chocolate or cookies. Whereas if you focus on the cost and you have this goal, you're going to eat less. You're going to consume less. So back to this idea of how can we get people to consume less if that's their goal, that's what we're aiming to do. The other piece that we're looking at is proximity. So how close are you to the cookies? And our idea actually initially is not cookies sitting in a basket like this, but cookies in a box or a bag with that information on it. And so you have access to that information if you want it. Right. And our idea is there's sort of two theories here. One is as the cookies get closer and closer to you, I become less and less cognitive and I have more of this sort of... emotional or affective reaction, and I go into it like a hot system. Some refer to it, and I'll eat those cookies, right? Because it's close to me.
Actual physical distance?
Yeah, physical distance. Okay. But I'll talk about it actually in two ways, both physical and temporal.
Okay.
It works.
Okay.
So you can think of it either way, but I'm talking physical right now. So when I'm right beside the cookies like this, my brain essentially shuts down to a large extent, and I just want to eat them because they're going to taste good. It's sort of one theory. We have a different prediction. I won't get into the details behind it, but our theory is that if you have a strong dieting goal and you get close to those cookies, that it triggers an interrupt in that normal pleasure-seeking system, and that interrupt makes you more likely to focus on the cost information. So the safest place, if you're a dieter and you have a bag of cookies that has nutritional information on it, the safest place for those cookies to be is right in front of you, because you'll look at the cost information and you'll be better able to resist. On the flip side, though, and I'll get to this later, if it's just like this and there's no cost information, regardless of what my goal is, I'm going to default to pleasure. Right? So it's really important to have that labeling. At least that's our prediction. So I'll show you data from, just because we don't have a lot of time today, I'll show you data from one experiment, and I'll talk about some of the other results that we have. So this is one of the studies that we looked at. Here we're using a computer-aided tracking software to get a sense of what people are looking at. The food that we have is chocolate, so it's either near or far. When it's near, it's right beside, so the subject is sitting at the computer and the chocolate is right beside them. When it's far, it's on the other side of the lab, so they can see it, but it's a ways away from them. And then we either prime them with a goal to be healthy, into a dieting type goal, or we don't. And we have two cost and two pleasure attributes, not as important, but what we're measuring is how much time people spend looking at cost relative to pleasure attributes. And the theory being, the more time you spend thinking about the cost of that consumption, the less you're going to consume. And on top of that, the people who are going to think the most about the cost of that consumption are the people that have it right in front of them and have a dieting goal. Everybody else is going to default to pleasure. So that's the only group that will be focused on the cost. So this is what we find. This is the people who have the goal and the cookies or chocolate, in this case, right in front of them. They process a lot more cost information. Everybody else tends to focus on pleasure, but this group focuses on the cost. So that's that nutrition label type information, right? Because of that, they tended to consume about two of the chocolates, whereas it's three to five chocolates down in all the other cells. So that group that had the goal and had the chocolates right in front of them, that group consumed the fewest chocolates and spent the most time looking at cost information. And not to get into statistics too much, but when we do the mediation analysis, it's really that time spent looking at the cost information that drives their consumption behavior. So what I was predicting in terms of proximity, that trigger of when you have a goal and you have the cookies or the chocolate right in front of you, that triggers this interrupt, makes you focus more on the cost information, and as a result you consume less. It also works with temporal proximity, which is what Lorette was just asking. And it works, so we would tell people you can consume them right now in the near temporal, or it's close in time condition. Or we'd say, well, you can take them with you. You can't eat them in the lab. You have to eat them sometime later. Right? And when we told them you can eat them right now, that's when it triggers that interrupt and you get people better able to resist. And then the other thing I talked about just briefly is we also manipulated whether or not that information was available at all. So this is the case where the cookies are just sitting right here. And it turns out everybody defaults to pleasure then. And everybody consumes as if they don't have a goal. So even if you're a dieter, if you don't have that nutritional information available, you tend to consume more. Right? It's sort of our basic pleasure-seeking type approach. Now, so that's really the goals and the standards, or goals and monitoring that I talked about earlier. The other piece is self-regulatory resources. And the prediction that Remy made here was that if we give you pleasure information, it's actually going to reduce the resources that you have. It's going to empty your cup. So you're going to have less ability to control your behavior just by seeing the pleasure information. So the energy, or however you want to conceptualize it, the resources that you have available will be depleted if we show you pleasure information. But if we show you cost information, you'll actually have more in terms of resources. And so that's what we looked at in another set of studies. I also think this is interesting, so I'll show it to you for a second. How we measure resources is not in terms of chocolate consumption, but a totally different self-regulatory task. So this self-regulatory task, and a few others have used it too, is when we ask people to persist as long as they can in spotting the 13 differences between these two puzzles. Right? And our measure of self-regulatory resource is how long you can last at that. Mm-hmm. Right? And I forget, there's only 10 differences is the key. So you cannot solve this problem, right? It's impossible. So we're just seeing how long people go before they hit the I give up button, right? We're going to drain that cup of resources, and this will measure how much was in that cup before they started. So everybody's randomly assigned to conditions, and then we give them, this time we give them only cost information or only pleasure information, and then we see how long they can persist. So what we see now, oh, and we also had a no information condition. So what we see now is that the dashed line is the pleasure, and the yellow line is the no information condition. So you see that people, whether they have a goal or not, when they have no information, they act just like when we give them the pleasure information. But when you have a goal and you have the cost information, it's the only you persist a lot longer. So these people here who had a goal, so these are the dieters who we showed pleasure information, they spent a lot of resources resisting the chocolates, and they couldn't last as long at the puzzle task. But these people, really interestingly, and this is sort of the area we're working in now, is why. But these people have a goal, and we show them the cost information. Now, they were actually able to last longer at the puzzle task. So when you had the goal and you had the cost information, you had more self-regulatory resources than if you had no information. And then that translates into how much you eat as well. I think, yeah, this is the number of chocolates consumed, right? So now those people who had the goal and cost information ate a lot fewer chocolates than the others, right? So we depleted them, and that changed their eating behavior. So from a higher level perspective, that's kind of theoretical work, but from a higher level perspective, it really does argue for the need for that kind of nutritional labeling. Because if you don't have it, even if you have the goal, you're likely to fail and default to pleasure. And mostly we're looking at chocolates and candies and ice cream and those kinds of things. So that's basically what I want to say. I don't know how long that took. But.
Well, in fact, you think your results are, for instance, on the labeling in restaurant, most importantly, I would suspect,
right.
But it's relevant. What, because the few studies that have been done to study, like New York, for instance, is having some mandatory results are not clear at all. I think most of the time, there's none. And in fact, there are some that having the information makes you consume more, in fact. So what else do you have?
You need both, right? You need the information, and you need it at the time that you're making the decision when it's right in front of you. So this will almost be the equivalent of when they bring out the dessert tray, they also have a little card that says, this is how much fat is in that dessert, right? Which restaurants aren't likely to do. But without doing that, without giving that cost information, then the consumer is likely to eat.
But what you're saying is something more. It's not only you give the information, but you remind them that you are in the goal of paying attention to your food.
Right. They also have to have that goal.
So, and
in fact, what we're saying is if you go out to eat at 8 o'clock at night, you've had a busy day, I bring out that dessert tray. Just by looking at that dessert tray and thinking about how good it's going to taste, you're burning your resources to resist it. All right. So as I'm standing there going, what do you think? This looks pretty good. How about this one? How about this one? By the time I get to the sixth dessert, I've burnt up all your resources, and now I say, which one would you like? Right, and there's no cost information. So
I think also, Loretta, that people, when they go out for dinner, they don't have a self-control.
Yeah.
That's the important thing. I'm going out for dinner, so I'm not trying to regulate my calories. So they would be in that other, the no-goal condition. So they're looking
at... Yeah, but if you want, from a public policy perspective, where currently everybody is talking about, let's put information... there, and it's better than not putting. If someone wants to look at it, they will.
Yeah.
But if you want to go a step further, it may be to make salient in some way
the
goal of paying attention to what you eat.
Right. Yeah, and to take that.
But
one
your
step
result
further.
Would.
So, like in the first few studies, we give them the option to look at whatever they want. And so they can choose to look at the pleasure or the cost. And so, again, if you're looking at a menu, you can choose to look at it or not. And you're saying make it more salient so that it's available. I think that would work. And to make it even more policy-oriented, I mean, even if you just moved the nutrition label on a package to the front as opposed to underneath, around the back, then it might trigger an interrupt as well.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of what we're looking at too, because I also did a study where I just had the box in there with no information. Mostly because it screwed up on the printer and didn't even know anyone know. Yeah. But yeah, I got the exact same result. So just the box itself made people think that, oh, maybe I shouldn't have it.
Is it really, or what you call proximity or distance from the consumer, could it be rephrased as the strength of the sensory cues? So I can imagine a very tasty dessert right in front of me, but behind the glass screen, so I can't get it.
Yeah,
originally the distance.
Originally, that's what I'm saying.
But if you think about the temporal aspect, where in either case we had it right in front of them, we just told them you can't eat it right now, you'll have to eat it later, mm-hmm. and we got the same result as if it was across the room. So it seems to be more about proximity than it does the cues from the chocolate.
So. It's interesting because Alain Daguerre, whom you will see tomorrow, has done some smoking study, DOPA type fMRI, and where he manipulated the temporal proximity like this and observed the same type of effects that you're talking about. Zach, you had a question.
No, I was just going to... Has anyone ever looked at what are the biggest cost factors? Is it trans fat? Is it saturated fat? Mm-hmm. Is it carbs? And then if you manipulate the size of the information, right, so make trans fat bold, red, underlined, does that sort of increase the salience of the cost?
Yeah, so there's... The U.S. is looking at changing their nutrition labeling. They have in Europe and Germany where they have soft light labeling, red, yellow, green. But I think what they find, I think Brian Wansick found, that people aren't aware of what really is, don't have a threshold of what it really is, high calorie or high fat or something. And, so again, I think the danger of doing this kind of soft light thing is you're going to give people some kind of a heuristic to go by that might make them make worse decisions, mm-hmm. or it might help them. But
there was a recent study that came out, actually just pretty timely, on the looking at the traffic light system, mm-hmm. and they found that it didn't influence consumer behavior for healthier choices.
Which study was it? Was it in the UK?
It was in the UK traffic light.
It's Mark Weiner. I don't know if you know Mark's work. Working on the triad profiling. And they find it works for some. One of the things it works, and the other one, it's the product thing, their result.
If you look at our results, kind of the way you look at it, it shouldn't work for most people because they're pleasure seeking and ignore that information anyway. And so we found only one group.
So you're saying there's some groups.
So if you look at those who had a goal and had the bag right in front of them.
Yeah.
Okay. So if I'm really trying hard to diet, mm-hmm. and I'm standing on the shelf looking at it, if you looked at that segment, our results would say you get an effect.
Yeah.
But if you look at the average person, no, because they want the cookies. They don't care about this. Right?
And even worse, when you're shopping on Saturday for next week,
mm-hmm.
So we show the same effect for temporal distance. So when you move that away, so we were saying you can't eat this right now. As soon as you leave the lab, so in half an hour, you can have it.
Mm-hmm.
The effect's wiped out.
Mm-hmm.
But so now if you're shopping for the week, if you're shopping for right now, this trigger and interrupt, you'll look at it and it's of value to you. But if you're shopping for the week, that temporal distance now, all of a sudden you're not going to look at it.
We should say, too, I didn't mention before, but our interest in this area is our total own lack of self-control.
Yeah.
Although you didn't eat a cookie then.
Yeah, I didn't eat a cookie. I was busy.
Who is next on the list? But I would love to have, as part of the portfolio of projects, to have a project about seriously looking at what you're looking at. And because the current philosophy is so much one size fits all, and let's put this thing there, and let's not look at in what context, with what type of consumer, what segment, it would be great if you scale up, if you build upon what you're doing in a way and you cast it as one of the projects that would be good. Who is next on the, I'm looking at Ash and Zach.